This is Will Friedle, the voice of the future Dark Knight, Batman Beyond, and you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app. And remember a few things. First, Dana deserves better. And second, I am Batman.
In the year 2039, Gotham City has no heroes. Its people, no hope. Its youth, no future.
Evening, boys and girls. Who's up for some laughs?
Terry McGinnis was part of the problem.
You can't control your temper, and you'd better if you expect to get anywhere in life.
Yeah, I'll be a big success, just like you.
Until a moment of violence brought him to the door of a man named Bruce Wayne.
Let's put a smile on his face.
Leave him alone. Once known as the Batman.
Man, you're something. You okay?
Now, the Dark Knight will rise again to drive the shadow of evil from the streets of Gotham. Let's go! Supervillains, beware! There's a new Batman in town. Batman Beyond.
You're pretty strong for some clown who thinks he's Batman.
I am Batman.
Justice returns to Gotham. Welcome to my world.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 244 of the DCAU Review. I am Cal, with me my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our Twitter account. That's right, Liam. Liam, we are still here in our futuristic reviews for the month of January. And as we returned back to the future last week with a rather hilarious double feature. If you missed that episode and you didn't do so intentionally, I invite you to check it out in the archives at DCAUReview.com. But we did a double feature of the Zeta Project last week. Liam, we are back in Gotham City, or at least the futuristic Gotham City here this week, as we get into the final 13 episodes of Batman Beyond this week with an interesting one, a return of a recurring villain here.
That's right. Some familiar faces to talk about here. We have the return of not only the Royal Flesh Gang, but really for the first time since season one, we have a look at Paxton Powers in the series as well. So we are, of course, talking about the episode King's Ransom this week.
Yes, indeed, Liam. This episode originally debuted, at least here in the States, back on September the 16th, 2000, meaning we are coming up, we just passed the 22-year anniversary, and we'll be coming up on the 23-year anniversary of this episode's debut. It's always nice when the years end in zeros, so it doesn't take that much to figure out how many years it's been. The head math isn't too at that point. But of course, before we get into our full review and breakdown of this week's episode, we will, of course, get to the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which is, of course, brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower to get our entire catalog of episodes, including that aforementioned previous appearance by Paxton Powers and
this week's villain group, the Royal Flush Gang, as well as the rest of our entire catalog and some great content from other DCAU creators. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower, subscribe and like our videos today.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for King's Ransom, which was written by Rich Fogel, directed by Butch Lukic, with music by Shirley Walker and animation by Coco and Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Reduced to doing Paxton Powers' dirty work, the Royal Flush Gang begins to fall apart. Batman has to clean up the mess.
Kind of like that one.
Yeah, there's a little, that's like a good, like, that's a good like 15 second spot for this episode.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For our kids WB voiceover guy.
I feel like you could open up the TV guide in 2000 and you would see that little blurb. And if you don't know what a TV guide is, folks, before there was the TV guide channel, is that still a thing? There was an actual book that people got delivered to their homes every week with a description of programming, times, channels, etc. So if you're interested, they were also collectibles. So go figure. But I digress. Liam, as we get into our plot here for this week's episode.
Yeah, that's right. So we kick it off. We're starting out hot and heavy, and that is something we'll talk about, I guess, as we get to our thoughts on the overall plot. This episode moves at a clip. Like, lots going on. So we open up with the Royal Flush Gang, sort of minus 10, of course, who is on the straight and narrow, as we come to find out. We have the Royal Flush Gang attempting to steal some sort of art, a statue, in fact, as we come to find out. And they're sort of immediately, it's clear that they are not having their best days. Jack and King and Queen all sniping at each other for various things. Alarms are getting set off. So as they sort of brute force their way into the museum and find the statue in question, of course, who but Batman shows up to thwart the attempted theft. And after some fisticuffs, Ace is sort of damaged. And as they attempt to get away, Jack is actually captured by Batman. And for not the last time in the episode, King sort of makes the decision to not go back to try to help out a family member here. And it's clear that the Royal Flush Gang is on their heels.
And you accepted this pittance?
What choice did I have?
This never would have happened if my father was still king.
Here we go.
Working for a reprobate like Powers was beneath him. He had class and made sure we were treated like royalty.
We've just had a run of bad luck, that's all.
Is it? Look at us. Ten is gone, Jack's in jail, and Ace, we can barely repair him anymore. Maybe it's time to fold our hand.
No, it's not over.
Give me one good reason not to walk away.
Because I need you. And because I have a trump that can't fail. One that will put the Royal Flush Gang back on top.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's not looking good. They as they get back to their hideout, which we'll talk about, I assume, in visuals, which is a abandoned casino, complete with artwork featuring the former Royal Flush Gang members, or at least effigies of them. We have Queen really giving King the business here. She's none too happy about their current situation. She compares him to her father, him being King. She compares King to her father, the former King, and how this would not be acceptable to her father and how things are being run now. And he is, King snaps back, letting her know that he's doing pretty much the best that he can. She points out the fact that they're slumming it up in this abandoned casino and that they can't afford to repair Ace, as we look over and see that the damage that he incurred during his fight with Terry or with Batman. The damage sustained he's seen better days, I guess, is a way of putting it. So mm-hmm. It's at this point that that King says that, you know, he's still working on it, and that they're going to get their money from this heist that they pulled. And, you know, but Queen is quick to remind him that working for a reprobate, as she calls him, like Powers, was beneath her father. And King assures her that it's temporary, that he's got another plan. But he goes and he delivers this trophy to Paxton Powers that he stole, this cat statue thing. And upon the delivery, Paxton realizes that it has been damaged and he's not going to pay full price for it. King attempts to kind of shake Paxton down nonetheless, but has his behind handed to him by Paxton's rather formidable assistant, who may or may not come into to play later on here. yes. So as we move along here, as I said, Queen none too happy that they have to sort of slum it up, that they're dealing with Paxton Powers. And King says he has another idea as he returns. He has another idea, once again involving Paxton. But this time it's not going to be Paxton sending them to do work. Nope. They show up at Paxton's penthouse and they are there to take him captive. So they kidnap Paxton. And wouldn't you know it, they're holding him for a king's ransom. Hey, that's the name of the episode.
There's nothing like a rub down after a hard day of corporate raiding.
Yes, Mr. Powers.
That will be all, Miss Thorpe.
What?
We need to follow up on our recent transaction, Mr. Powers.
Please, don't hurt me. I'll give you anything you want.
Indeed, you will.
Yes, there's a lot of, as we'll get to, there's a lot of card puns in this episode.
Everything they say. But then they switch it up and go to chess, too. Then it's checkmate later on. So
yes, there's a lot of wordplay, especially I think almost every word out of Bruce and Terry's mouth in this episode is either a chess or a card game pun. Mm-hmm. But yes, after the abduction takes place, we actually do get our first look at what Melanie, aka the former 10, has been up to. She's working in a restaurant, seemingly has her life at least a little bit together. And but of course then she sees the news of her former gang, her family, having abducted Paxton Powers. And as she goes to kind of gather her thoughts outside, she's confronted by none other than Batman, who comes to her and asks if she has any info. And she's very adamant that she hasn't talked to anyone in her family since the last time that they had all run afoul of Batman. And as he's about to leave, she asks him if Terry ever got the note that she had given Batman to give to him in the episode. And Terry assures her that yes, or the Batman assures her that yes, Terry did get the note. And Melanie sort of has this remark that she must be dead to Terry as well. So things are not looking great for Melanie, but you know, she's a bad person. So not as bad as Terry, but
true.
Anywho, that's true. Hashtag Dana deserves better.
Clear off table 7.
I'm still waiting on a salad.
Where's table 5's meatloaf?
Has reportedly been abducted. Officials refuse to comment, but inside sources say that the notorious Royal Flush Gang may be involved. Long the scourge of Gotham, the gang has most recently been involved in a number of art heists around town. As of this moment, there have been no ransom demands.
You okay, Mel?
And police are intensifying their search for the missing CEO.
I need some air.
Can I get that to go?
Look, I haven't talked to my parents in months. I had nothing to do with that Powers business.
I know.
But if you should hear anything...
I won't. As far as they're concerned, I don't exist.
I'm sorry.
Wait! You remember that note I gave you? The one for Terry McGinnis? Did he...
Yeah, he got it.
I guess I don't exist to him either.
But yes, as we go, the Royal Flush Gang having Paxton tied up, and he's sort of trying to tell them that he personally doesn't have a lot of money. You know how rich people are always claiming they don't have that much money?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Paxton's doing that.
Yes,
and so he's claiming that all of his money is tied up in dividends and company perks, and that and so as King is again frustrated, and Queen is again sort of questioning King's resolve, King decides he's going to call Bruce Wayne and try to get a ransom out of Bruce Wayne, who is very quick to dismiss this idea, noting that that Wayne Enterprises has a strict policy against negotiating with terrorists, and that in fact Paxton himself had written the policy, which I love as a little wrinkle, because you have to assume at some point Paxton was either hoping or planning to have someone kidnap Bruce.
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
And then use this as the justification for why the company wouldn't pay to get him back.
Yep.
But here it's seemingly turned the other way.
Wayne here.
Mr. Wayne, I'm sure you're aware of your company's present predicament.
But I'm a fair man. You can have your president back for a mere 20 million credit.
No deal.
Perhaps you didn't understand.
If you don't pay, we'll be forced to dispose of him.
I understand perfectly. But it's against company policy to pay terrorists or kidnappers.
Ask Paxton. He wrote the policy.
Bruce? You're not really gonna...
Relax. It's not over.
And we sort of, again, as after Bruce refuses the ransom demands, we see Queen and King again... Or sort of at each other's throat, and right when King is looks like he's about to take the sword to Paxton, Paxton suggests that perhaps there is another way, and lets him in on a little secret that he has been sort of has a private collection of stolen art and jewels, and that there's a specific crown in his collection that is worth twice what they were asking Bruce for. So as King is about to call Paxton's assistant and tell her to bring it to him. Instead, Queen has an idea, which is that they get a sort of neutral third party to bring them the crown. And that is, of course, once again, they call Bruce Wayne. And that sort of sets up our next big action sequence here, as it's Bruce arriving with the crown, supposed to do an exchange. Before that exchange can take place, we do have the note that Paxton has a sort of an extra offer for the Royal Flush Gang, and that he feels that once it's revealed that he has the secret stolen art collection, that Bruce will use this to send him to jail and get him ousted from the company. So if the Royal Flush Gang agrees to also Bruce Wayne in the ensuing melee, that he can perhaps reward them even further. So we're setting up our big confrontation here as Bruce and Terry go and collect the crown.
There. The Crown of Tikal. It disappeared from a museum in Mexico City 3 years ago.
Are you sure you want to ransom this creep?
It's my move. I'm just sweetening the pot.
You have it? Excellent, Mr. Wayne. We'll meet you. Congratulations, Paxton. Your investments have paid off.
Yeah, right.
You don't seem too happy.
Happy about going to jail? Wayne hates me. When he tells the district attorney about my collection, I'll be locked up for years. Unless...
What?
Unless Wayne was dealt out of the game, then my secret would be safe. I'd have access to millions in company credits, and I'd be in a position to show my gratitude.
Are you saying...
Yes. Eliminate Wayne.
And we're setting up this confrontation. And Terry is sort of playing lookout, but then is knocked out by Ace, who knocks out the other lookout. and then we set up this really fun confrontation. Again, something we'll probably talk about more in visuals, but where Bruce is sort of left to fend for himself against King and Queen, as he realizes that he's been had and that this is now an assassination attempt. But thankfully, not only does Terry recover in time to take out Ace, but another Ace is there on the scene to save Bruce right in the nick of time.
You might say he has an ace in the hole.
In fact, he literally says that.
Indeed, he does. But yes, thankfully, Ace, not the Bat Hound, just Ace, the dog, is able to come to Bruce's rescue just when all seems lost, attacking King. So we have King tussling with Ace the dog. We have Terry sort of going round and round, both with Ace the robot and Queen here, and then Bruce, who is tussling with chest pains, as it appears that he is having some sort of cardiac event that he has to take some pills with. So it's Bruce versus his childproof lock that he's trying to get off of his bottle of chest pills.
Oh man,
three just battles that you have been dying to see. We oh man, so good. Oh, man. At the culmination of the fight, Terry or Bruce, Batman is able to overwhelm and overtake Queen and sort of short circuit Ace, as we see him, you know, short circuit in a fountain and begin to fall apart. And then it's Ace the dog versus King, and Ace sort of holds on for dear life as King begins to depart, grabbing, not before he grabs the crown though, and takes off, and he's Ace the dog drops off to the ground, holding a piece of King's costume. And as King stands there floating on his flying playing card, he looks down and sees Batman handcuffing Queen, who he had finally overtaken in battle. And as he looks, Queen can't believe it, but she sees him taking off, and Batman remarks that he's cut his losses.
King!
Guess he decided to cut his losses.
He wouldn't. He couldn't.
He did.
Good boy. What kept you?
They had an ace in the hole.
Luckily, so did I.
So at that point, it appears that King has made off with the crown, and once again, as he did in earlier in the episode, has abandoned one of his family members. The very next scene, we cut back to the abandoned casino, where we see King celebrating the return of his loot, and assuming him being able to reestablish himself as a fine gang leader. He'll just go find a new family, probably, or he'll make a new family, perhaps, with the double cross reveal, as we recognize that who was in on this all along to help King out. But Miss Thorpe, the assistant to Paxton Powers, as she recognizes now that she was involved with the plan. The plan the whole time was to get Paxton's security codes. She was aware of this collection of rare stolen goods that he had, but didn't have the security codes. Now that they have the security codes, herself and King can run off and be together. And it is at this moment that, for some reason, I don't know why, it's not really explained, but Queen, who we last saw handcuffed in the previous scene, is now free, sort of, again. I guess Terry either let her go or brought her with him in pursuit of King. It's not really clear. But she's mm-hmm. not too happy, and hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, as they say. And she is there as we get a battle between King and Queen. And in the meantime, the very formidable Miss Thorpe, who was doing some pretty strong martial arts earlier in the episode, as we mentioned, pretty handedly handing out some fisticuffs to King. She and Batman do battle, but Batman eventually overtakes him. And Queen has been taken out by King. She's knocked unconscious. So that leaves King and Batman, and they're going back and forth with some verbal sparring. And King exclaims that Batman doesn't understand. He doesn't know what it's like to have to sit there and listen to being constantly compared to somebody else, to be living life in someone else's shadow. Mm-hmm. It is that in that moment, the ironic defeat of King is done by none other than the portrait of Queen's father. The original King drops from the heavens and lands on top of King, knocking him out. And there ended the reign of this self-proclaimed King.
Nothing I ever did was good enough for your Royal Highness.
Well, I want out. No one's going to stop me.
You fool, you led him right to us.
Have you flipped your crown?
I couldn't stand it anymore. The constant comparison. Do you have any idea what it's like living in someone's shadow?
Actually, I can relate.
So we get a nice postscript here as at Gotham, at GCPD. Not only has King been remanded into custody, we also have Paxton Powers, who we realize is also being taken into custody as he's threatening, as every rich person does when they are arrested. They're going to sue, they're going to own everything, they can't mm-hmm. talk to him like that, that they can't believe that they're accusing him of trying to kill Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne is like a father to him. And then Barbara Gordon makes a remark about how, yes, but Bruce doesn't glow in the dark, which is hilarious. We then get a nice cut to one of the cells at GCPD where Jack is sitting, and they let him know that his bail has been posted and he's being let out. And who's there to meet him? None other than Melanie, AKA 10, as she remarks that she had to hand out a lot of salads at the restaurant in order to pay for his bail, but she'd like to offer him a job working at the same restaurant, washing dishes. And Jack gleefully accepts, noting that he was quite talented at washing dishes at the juvenile hall where he was formerly a resident. So we get a nice little bow put on it as Batman flies away. So, and that is the episode this week. Give me your thoughts on the plot this week, Liam.
Yeah, like I said, I think there's a lot. It moves, as we said, it moves very quickly. There's a lot of moving parts to this. You got to introduce the Royal Flesh Gang in, you know, that they're in crisis, sort of. And then you have to introduce the Paxton Powers side of it. You have to do the kidnapping, then the counter plan of killing Bruce Wayne, all leading to this extra triple swerve where it turns out that, you know, the whole episode, it seems like Queen is at her wit's end with King. And meanwhile, it turns out that he's been, you know, stepping out on her and was planning to leave her behind. So there's a lot, you know, the old no honor amongst thieves. There's a lot of double and triple crosses in this episode. So I think it's a lot of fun. Like you said, I think there is a lot. So I could understand maybe if people thought there's like a little too much in this,
mm-hmm.
but overall, I think it's a lot of fun. I do have some, and these questions might be better, soon to be directed to, some of our friends over at the Watchtower database. So Queen's father was the former King.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume this is not the King from the Justice League episode.
Correct.
So probably someone, and that, it's not clear if like there's a familial relation in every version of the Royal Flesh Gang or not.
Correct.
The Royal Flesh Gang is just a bunch of people, a bunch of teenagers that Cadmus and the Joker and whoever screwed right. over. So I'm like, is there any familial connection between this Queen and the original Royal Flesh Gang that we see in Wild Cards?
I don't think there's any reason to assume that there is, like you said, because I mean, you could, I guess, because they were all teenagers, right? Cadmus teens, but I don't, I think that based on, was there a British one? That's the question.
Right.
I mean, I guess, could there have been three generations between? No, right? I don't think so. I think
so. Somebody else just took up the mantle. And his daughter and her husband and their daughter end up taking up the mantle sometime after that.
Right. Like in my head canon, it would be like there was some British gang that copied what they saw on the widely seen Cadmus teens that were all over, you know, trying to blow up Vegas or whatever it was.
Okay. With
the Joker. Like they, it's sort of like how the Jokers in the Beyond timeline sort of modeled themselves after the Joker, but there's no real relation there. It's just they took up the spirit of what the Joker was, I guess.
That makes sense. And there's the line, I think, in the first episode where King talks about Batman having broken up the gang once before or something like that, but that doesn't necessarily, he certainly doesn't say the Justice League broke up our gang after we tried to blow up Las Vegas. So
right, that's true.
Hard to pull a direct comparison, but that was just something I was thinking about. But yes, I think overall it's an interesting episode. It's interesting because King and Queen are really like the stars of the episode. As we said, Bruce and Terry are mostly there. I mean, they're around, but it's mostly them just trying to figure out what's going on, and then, as we said, making a lot of card game and chess related puns. So I think it was an interesting idea, and then also throwing in Paxton Powers, who is a character we really haven't seen since that first season, who felt like, you know, he was going to be the Harry Osborn of the show maybe. And again, that might come back to what they originally had planned for a second season versus what happened when they were sort of told to make it more like Buffy or whatever the edict was from Kids WB at the time. But it's interesting that they just kind of threw him back in there and then, you know, write him back out of the show.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So like I ended up settling on an 8 out of 10. I do really enjoy the episode. And like I said, I think those final twists and turns of the episode kind of make it like a heist casino thriller, like it's not quite Ocean's 11 or something, but it's all the twists and turns and double crosses, I think, are a lot of fun. And I like our little happy ending where, you know, Melanie may not have Terry, she may not have her parents, but that she and Jack are going to make a legitimate try of making a fresh go of things. So I like the little bow that is put on this for this story, where, you know, maybe King and Queen are lost causes, but maybe the next generation is going to be okay.
Yeah. I actually gave it the same exact score, an 8 out of 10. It is wall to wall action, as you said. It's an interesting story with all the twists and turns, and as you mentioned, the double triple cross. I love the idea that Queen just berates King for not being enough like her father, and he just finally has enough of it, that he decides to just go off on his own, and ultimately that's his downfall, because ironically they're the Royal Flush Gang. It's not just King. The reason why they seemingly were so successful, especially if you look, the fight between Batman and the gang that occurs at the fountain, if it wasn't for Ace the Dog, Bruce probably ends up dead. That clearly they have him outnumbered. The numbers game catches up with Batman pretty quickly in that 3-on-1. So imagine if it was 5-on-1 or 6-on-1 as the gang originally was set up, then you have a very different, you're telling a very different story. So I think it's ironic that the guy who decided to cut people off in order, whether it's because they, you know, didn't want to live this life of crime anymore, or if it was because they were of no use to him, or because they were, you know, questioning his leadership. He's cutting all these people off around him. He ends up by himself. And because of that, he's outdone, because one-on-one, he's no match for Batman. Like, that's the really poetic thing that I think works out there at the end with this story. So I love it. I think it's written really well. It's a lot of fun. It does feel much more like an early season, you know, season one episode than it does, you know, some of the later sillier episodes that we saw. So I like that return to form there. And, you know, it's just, it very much feels like you could have cut and paste this into any of the other DCAU shows. Also, it just so happens to take place here in the Beyond world. So you could have had this, you know, gang going for a heist and then double crossing Batman, really, like I said, in any of those other shows. So I love that feel, and some great work by Rich Fogel and Butch Lukic on this episode. So really, really enjoyed it. I think it surprised me to a point also. I was like, I didn't remember this one being so much fun, but it's definitely a lot of fun. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And as you mentioned at the top, we had Coco and Dong Yang here. I will start off with just saying my one critique that I had. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you watched this on HBO Max or if you watched it on the Blu-ray or DVD. I watched it on HBO Max, and there is something off in a lot of the scenes where the blacks, the deep black colors, ended up being like a gray, they don't quite match up, and that takes me out of the scene so often, because it just is very distracting, because things that you know that are supposed to be colored and in some scenes are colored this deep rich black color, in other scenes are this lighter gray, and you can kind of see some of the places where the cell shading was supposed to be or in the drawings. And it's really, really distracting. And it happens a lot, because this is an episode that features a lot of characters that have this dark black on them. Batman's suit keeps changing colors from dark gray to dark black to, you know, to somewhere in between the two of them. Same thing happened with Bruce's outfit especially in the scene where they're making the ransom call. The suit kept changing from this deep dark black to purple to black again. I don't know if these were episodes that were already done in digital animation, so this shouldn't have been something like a remaster, right? What do you think could have possibly happened that has caused this?
Yeah, I mean, I have to assume this would have been an issue with the original coloration of the cartoon back in the day. Because, yeah, I would assume other than an up-res, there's not a lot of color correction going on in these Blu-ray sets, other than, you know, just up-resing them to, you know, to modern television standards. So, yeah, I just have to assume that's just a a rare mistake. Like, we, you know, you get one of those every other frame in a Super Friends or something, or, you know, an old Hanna-Barbera cartoon, or even in the original animated series. I mean, we talked about, you know, Heart of Ice is the first one that comes to mind, where the, you know, color, where the bat symbol keeps flipping colors and things like that. So it does happen, but those types of mistakes, like a coloration mistake, seems increasingly rare as we got deeper and deeper into these shows.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you said you're in the digital animation and digital coloration era of making these cartoons. Yeah, so that is interesting. Like, the only thing I could chalk it up to would be a coloration mistake. I mean, the only other thing I could think of was that it was a very, very dark gray, but then the brightening for the HD release just made it pop more as a lighter, you know, a slightly less dark gray. I mean, that's also a possibility. I think that can happen with these digitally cleaned up cartoons sometimes, is that there's, you know, the colors are that were sort of meant to be left murkier and darker sometimes get brightened up by, you know, a part of the process of making everything, you know, suitable for HD. And so that would be my only other guess on a technical issue. But yeah, that is fascinating. It's not something we've run into. Certainly I can't ever remember running into it on Beyond, for sure.
Yeah. That was the only thing that distracted me quite a bit, was the constant changing of the, and a lot of it occurs in scenes where there's multiple, like the backgrounds are deep, rich black. Like I said, there's, you know, this episode takes place, with the exception of the, I think with the exception of the final scene, everything takes place at night. So everything is in this deep, dark shadow. And there's from scene to scene, it changes. You know, there are some scenes where King's hood is deep, rich black and blends in directly with the backgrounds. And then there's the next scene where it stands out and it's gray. And you can kind of see these lines underneath of it, where there would have been like a cell coloration or a shadow mark almost. It's very, very odd. Same thing happened on Batman's costume and a couple of the different scenes. But that's my one nitpick for the episode, because I thought the rest of the episode, because of all of the action, there's so many really fun sequences and things that stand out. I think from the get-go, the chase on the cards is great, and Batman knocking Jack right off of his playing card through the glass window is a great way to kick off the episode with this chase scene. And we get the return of the Batman finger microphones, up against the glass, something we hadn't seen in some time, probably since the middle of season two. But always love seeing that piece of technology used. We get a lot of Batman remembering he can turn invisible in this episode, by the way. We didn't even, I mean, it doesn't help him at the end when Ace the robot, who has the ability to see thermal imaging, uses that to find out where Batman's location is. But he actually uses his invisibility for good and smart reasons here today. So I enjoyed that. One thing I picked up on, I don't know if you noticed this, speaking of that aforementioned negotiation scene, but the scene where Bruce is sitting there and the King calls him and demands the ransom, and Bruce sort of subtly, gleefully responds that he's not going to negotiate with terrorists. And he predicts it's not over. He said, Terry kind of looks at him and asks him, you're not going to let him die, are you? And he's like, it's not over, trust me. So then they cut back to King and Queen and Paxton, and that's where they come up with their plan. And then the phone call back to Bruce, and Bruce is sitting there sipping his tea, and he looks over at Terry as the phone rings, and he kind of gives the very classic subtle Alfred eyebrow raise. Like he gives, it's very subtle. I'm going to say it's intentional based on the situation, but I'm like, he got that eyebrow lift from Alfred, no doubt. Like he's giving him the subtle, like, told you so, as the phone rings and is King once again demanding a different way to ransom Paxton. But I thought that was a nice little subtle thing, where if it wasn't done intentionally as an homage to Alfred, I think you could chalk it up to it in my head canon. There is a nice little,
love that,
nice little homage to Alfred. And then as I mentioned, the aforementioned Ace Vision, where we get thermal imaging, was pretty awesome. The fight scene at the end, the triple battle that you have going on between, Batman taking on Ace and then Queen, Bruce doing his own battle with King, and then Ace the dog jumping in to fight King. Like, what a rapid fire piece of action. So many cool little bits in that scene in particular.
Yeah, I was gonna say I straight up fist pumped when Bruce snaps his face, comes leaping out of the car window to save Bruce right as King's about to fire his energy weapon at him. I was like, yeah, that's a great bit there. And there's a great shot of as King is, like, for the next 2 minutes of screen time, we just see, like, as Bruce is dealing with Queen, and then we cut back to Terry, and Terry's not, taking care of Ace, and then Paxton gets knocked off his playing card surfboard and gets, like, strung up in a tree, and then action's kind of all focused on Terry. Ace comes flying down and some of his circuitry is exposed, so he falls into a fountain, and then he sort of jumps out and immediately is this giant electricity. And meanwhile, just once in a while, we cut to an angle where we can still see King and Ace just, like, wrestling and rolling back and forth on the ground. It's a really kind of funny funny bit of there's kind of a few moments of like, oh, not quite slapstick, but some funny choices made there. And then there's a shot of, we kind of get like King's POV shot dealing with Ace, and Ace is and trying to protect Bruce, that is, he's like frothing at the mouth and he has all this slobber all over his jaws and he's really baring his teeth. I thought that was that whole sequence is really fun. Just the shot of the way it's animated of Ace sort of flying over the Ace the robot flying over the trees, and then Batman flying behind him and sort of knocking into him, and he sends Ace flying, and Ace like skips like he's a rock on the lake, skips over the tops of the trees into Paxton. Paxton falls into the trees and Ace falls into the fountain. Just some of the kind of sequential action that they pulled off in that that big second act action sequence, I think is fantastic.
Yeah, the whole thing, I love that Bruce gets a little bit of Batman time, sort of. He does the disappearing act where he's drowning in the fountain and he tricks King. He's wearing this big overcoat and King goes to drown him, and he pulls the fake out and does the disappearing act, reappearing act from behind. And then he kind of uses the cane like he would a batarang, where he kind of hurls it in King's direction. I loved that. I think there's that whole scene also. Meanwhile, the fisticuffs that are occurring between Batman and Queen are really, really fun, because there's this neat little sequence that they animated so smoothly where Batman, it's right at the end. Queen sort of swings at him with her mace, and Batman catches her wrist, pops out the old timey TNBA bat cuffs. And this is after he's done a complete flip over top of her, a back flip, and pops the handcuffs on her, the bat cuffs on her. Just a great little quick, like 2.5 second little animation, but it was done so smoothly and done so well. I absolutely loved it. There's a couple of other things that I could bring up. I love the weapons that the Royal Flush Gang use outside of their standard weapons. Speaking of which, there's a great little sequence that was done where it's actually a cut to commercial break where they're about to kill Bruce. And then they come back and it's just a shot of King, and he picks up his sword and he turns it ever so slightly. And you see the reflection of Bruce standing before him in the sword. Just a really cool little sequence there. It's, again, it's real short, it's real quick, but man, how cool is that to be able to see the reflection in the sword? It just brings this, animation to life. Really, really beautiful. I love this episode. Lots of fun outside of the fact that you have this super cool, colorful set of villains and that are always entertaining to look at on screen. You have so many great animated fights and this action that occurs pretty much nonstop throughout. And then at the end, you get to, I love that they gave Jack a little pirate shirt. He gets like a little Jerry Seinfeld pirate puffy shirt on the way out as he and Melanie are there talking. So that was just like the cherry on top for me as far as the animation and visuals this week. And that's why, and we get a nice little Batman flying away as the sun rises or sunsets, one or the other. But animation and visuals, very strong. The only thing that took me out was that sort of black gray, whatever was happening with that. So I gave it a very strong 9 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it the exact same score. If we didn't touch on it enough, the final sequence in the in the casino, and you mentioned it, it's like this old abandoned playing card factory or
I think it's a casino. I think
you're right, it's casino, because there's like billiards tables and blackjack tables and things like that, and as mentioned, there's these giant playing cards hanging from the ceiling. It's just a great, like the background I thought was so incredible in that whole bit. But it's fun whole episode, king and queens, their weapons. Queen has this like staff with a big jewel on the head of it, and king has a sword, and they both sort of fire off energy of some kind, but it's not the way they sort of animated it, it's more like a white flame than it is. It's not really electricity. So I thought that was kind of an interesting way it sort of flickers around the you know, when it's about to fire, it sort of flickers and was more like a flame than like you know, a bolt of lightning or something. So I thought that was a cool idea to visualize that that power. And then I was kind of surprised by how brutal that shot at the end, as when Batman reemerges in the fight as Queen and King are fighting each other, and then he realizes that Batman's there, and he just fires this blast of energy at Queen, and she just gets slammed through a wall, and you just see the shot of her like leaning like halfway out of the destroyed sign of the building. I was like, that was surprisingly, like, I mean, it's an energy, you know, it's a magic, you know, a nondescript white energy blast, so it's not like it was a bully thing or like a closed fist or anything, but I was like, that's still pretty brutal. Like I was surprised.
It kind of reminded me, isn't there a scene in one of the Superman episodes where he's fighting Livewire where that happens, where she gets like thrown into a neon sign, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Like it was very similar to that in my mind, like where she, you know, she sort of her body's just sort of lifelessly hanging over the end of it. Yeah, quite brutal. It goes without saying also the demise of King being crushed by a giant card it evokes like every classic 60s Batman, you know, Batman 66 villain getting their comeuppance, you know, with a giant playing card crushing him. Like that classic Batman evoked here in the future Neo Gotham, with the villains still getting their comeuppance by poetry.
Absolutely, yeah. So that whole last sequence is great. Paxson's assistant, who they give a name to, I think it's Sable Thorpe. Mm-hmm. She has a very striking design. I don't know if she was based on who the voice actor of King, I thought maybe she was based on like a specific Bond girl or something. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't necessarily find a direct analog. So if anybody has any ideas about that, feel free to tweet us or comment on our Instagram at DCAU Review and let us know. But I liked that design. And again, that last second twist in the story and her, that whole sequence where she's just kind of kicking the crap out of King at the start of the episode is interesting too. So yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff across this episode as far as visuals go. And if I didn't put over the backgrounds and everything in the art museum at the start of the episode are really strong too. So just yeah, really good work across the board.
Yeah, the background, the one that stood out to me was where King and King meets Paxton for the first time. Like it's very classic Batman. It looked like a painted background. It was not a digital background. It was much more the traditional, you know, painted dark, almost Batman the Animated Series style background. So much appreciated on that one. So yeah, lots of good work, solid all the way around, and superb in some areas, as reflected in both of our scores. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. Correct me if I'm wrong, the late great Shirley Walker, you said, responsible for this week?
Absolutely, yes.
A rarity in this era.
I was gonna say, yeah, by Superman, I think she was still overseeing and conducting the orchestras, but seeing her as the credited composer, I think got a little bit more rare as time went on, once, you know, people like Lolita Ritmanis and Michael McQuish and Christopher Carter were brought on. But yeah, it was really fun to see that name pop up. And one note that I did have, and it was, I don't have a ton of notes on music because it is still mostly, I think, your standard beyond fare as far as your, you know, your drum machine kind of, you know, fast paced action music. And a lot of the scenes in between, like the scenes when Bruce and Terry are sitting in the manor, and King and Queen and Paxton and are making the ransom call, there is no music. So the music actually does lay out quite a bit in our non-action sequences. But one note I did have is I thought in that final action sequence where King is sort of monologuing about being stuck in someone's shadow and all of this and sort of really breaking down in front of Batman, there's like some non-typical, beyond typical maybe for a Shirley Walker score, but not typical for a Batman Beyond score. There, you still have the guitar and the drums, but some more traditional strings and things get brought in over top of it, mm-hmm. and sort of lay those strings on top of the guitar, which I thought gave it a very sort of interesting sound, as it is. It still fits within the show, but there's a little bit more as he's, you know, giving this sort of soliloquy about being, you know, in the shadow of his father-in-law, that you brought in a little bit more of the traditional music, which I think it works because it's a very, as you said, a very traditional Batman villain sort of scenario to find yourself in, right down to the way he's undone by the playing cards. So I appreciated a little bit more of the strings being brought in. And then I also like kind of the sort of soft, more tender music that comes in the very last scene as Melanie and Jack are kind of having their heart to heart as well.
Yeah, I didn't have too many additional notes other than what I agree with the things that you had said. Those were some of the notes that I had. I think the scene where Batman goes to speak with Melanie and her sort of reaction to being, feeling like she's abandoned or feeling like she's all alone, you know, as Batman flies away, there's sort of the strings and synth come in together, as you mentioned. And I don't think that there's anything that stood out as a single piece that would be unique in a world where so many of the pieces are great. They don't necessarily differentiate themselves. I think the strings do add something to a few of the scenes and punctuate some of the more important moments, especially as King is yelling at Batman about living in somebody else's shadow, as you mentioned. But I think overall it's a good solid episode. You know, nothing to hate on. I think the chase scene at the very beginning was soundtracked very well. And that was another note that I had. There was some great, even though it's a short chase that ends in Jack being thrown through a window, it is done incredibly well, as was the case, as I point out, throughout the DCAU. So very strong, went with a good 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah. Not surprisingly, perhaps I settled on the exact same score of a 7 out of 10. Yeah. I think, like I said, there's nothing outstanding or super memorable, but like I said, I think it always works. And as we talk about, sometimes it's about it's about the notes you don't play to sound really really up my own tuchus about musical theory for a moment here. But it's a good soundtrack, and like I said, I think there's some certain high notes, if you will forgive a pun.
Agreed. There you go. All right, Liam, let's bring it on home here with our final category of the day. And that, of course, is going to be voice acting. We have some individuals returning from prior roles. We have some characters returning with new voices being cast in their stead. Let's talk about this week's voice cast.
That's right. So as mentioned, we have a new voice actor for Jack, that being Nicholas Guest, who has done a few other kind of ancillary voices for the DCAU shows, as well as a lot of other voice work to his credit. I really love him in that last scene with the returning Olivia Dabo, who, again, doesn't have as much to do here. She just has the one scene with Batman and that final scene. But that final scene between Mr. Guest and Miss Dabo, I think, is really wonderful. And it kind of makes, like I said, I think this episode gets very kind of dark. And like I said, there's so many twists and turns and betrayal. And to have this little glimmer of light at the end of it, I think, is a nice touch there. So I like them playing off each other, even in smaller roles here.
Okay, Jack, you're out of here.
What?
Someone made your bail.
Melanie.
I made a lot of salads to pay for this.
You shouldn't have.
Hey, we're family, okay? I got a job for you. A real job. That is, if you don't mind washing dishes.
Are you kidding? I was the best dishwasher in Julie Hall.
Yeah, as you mentioned, not tons for them to do. We get the other scene with Jack being interrogated and kind of being smarmy. So it's nice to have him have a little bit of a redemptive arc there at the end. It's unfortunate or fortunate, depending on which character you're talking about, that we don't get more of them in this in the rest of this series here, as this is their final appearances. But yeah, it's a nice little kind of light, you know, happy ending in a episode that was could have been rather dark towards the end based on how things went. So agree with you there. It was nice to have them have a scene together when we kind of get them both on the straight and narrow here, and a new path set out for this this family that was unfortunately divided and torn apart and defined by crime, their lives of crime.
Yeah. So from there, we can look at another replacement voice actor. We have Angie Harmon coming on as the new voice of Barbara Gordon, replacing Stockard Channing, who had done the voice in the first two seasons. We had, I believe, briefly talked about Miss Harmon's performance because she does also voice Barbara in Return of the Joker. So she does only a few appearances as Barbara in the main show. But yeah, as you said, she does get a very funny one-liner off working with Parker Stevenson, who's playing Paxton Powers in this episode. Another recast, speaking of which, because previously he had been voiced by Cary Elwes.
Bruce Wayne? They're lying, I tell you. Bruce Wayne's my mentor. He's like a father to me.
Except he doesn't glow in the dark.
Hey, I resent that. Where's my lawyer? I'll sue. I'll own this place when I'm done.
Let's
with you.
Get out of here.
And I do remember us not being a huge fan of Mr. Elwes's performance in that original episode.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't love Mr. Stevenson. Like, I don't think he's bad, and he is funny in that last scene when he's playing off of Miss Harmon as Barbara Gordon, but for as much time as he's on screen, I don't think he's particularly good.
I'm not a disagreement alarm, but I didn't dislike his role here. I think he fills that smarminess. He what's asked of him. He's the sniveling sort of willing to throw whoever needs to be under the bus in order to get whatever he wants, as is the case with both the initial interaction between him and King, where he sort of dismisses him and gives him breadcrumbs in exchange for this rare treasure that he stole, all because it has a little bit of damage to it, to the point where he's sort of groveling and trying to convince King not to kill him, and then where he's kind of excited at the end and feels like he's kind of got the upper hand of Bruce. I think the best scene definitely is, though, the arrest scene with him sort of threatening Barbara, and then also his reaction once Barbara throws out the line about Bruce not glowing in the dark like his father. That was good, but there's not a whole lot to the character. It's pretty one-dimensional for this episode, and it's really really hard to judge, I guess, a character based on one appearance. But I didn't hate him, but there wasn't anything that I was like, that was great either.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Elsewhere on our cast, we have Gabrielle Carteris, who voices Paxton's assistant, Sable Thorpe. Folks probably know her best from a pretty long stint on the original Beverly Hills 90210, as well as a lot of other voice work and things like that to her credit as well. It's funny, again, she doesn't have a lot to do because she's kind of meant to blend into the background, I think, until that final scene where you get the big reveal with her and King. But I think she does a solid job again, which is why I would wonder if her if her character design was based off of someone particular, because she does definitely have that like very sultry, like raspy quality to her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that this is based on like a particular actress or a particular role that I'm just not familiar with. But I think she does a solid job there. And then yeah, our lead villains returning to their roles, we have Sarah Douglas as Queen, and it's been a long time since we've covered a Royal Flesh Gang episode, so it's possible we've talked about this before, but she's Ursa in the Chris Reeve Superman films. I don't remember ever talking about that before.
No, I don't think so. I don't think we did. That's very interesting.
But yeah, I was looking at her today and I was like, she looks familiar. And then I clicked on the thing and yeah, sure enough, she was. I really like her. And then she's playing off of course, King, the returning George Lazenby, who would best be known for playing James Bond in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Also, of course, played Jor-El in a couple of episodes of the Superboy, the live action series of the late 80s, early 90s. But certainly the Bond role was certainly more famous to him. And actually, as you pointed out, this grand line that leads to his ultimate comeuppance, talking about how hard it is to work in another man's shadow, given that Mr. Lazenby had to follow Sean Connery as James Bond, I assume that's a little bit of a wink and a nod to you know, what was by all accounts still a very strong and prolific career on camera and on the stage for Mr. Lazenby. But yeah, a fun little meta line to throw in there. But yeah, I think Mr. Lazenby and Sarah Douglas as Queen, they carry this episode, and they kind of have to because they're the main characters of it, as mentioned. But I think they're great together. The way they're sniping at each other kind of constantly throughout the episode, in the way that an old married couple who hates each other would.
Yeah.
And there's even, and something, I think this is actually a note on the DCAU wiki, but there's even like a few moments where like the prim and proper British accent kind of slips, and you get some slang from King. So it's like this idea that he's sort of putting on this air of being this sophisticated mastermind, when really at his heart he's just a brute and a thug like you know, any other criminal. I think there's some really fun subtleties between those two in this episode, and they're both fantastic.
No, they're great. They have a lot of dialogue, as you mentioned, playing off of each other. King playing off of Paxton Powers, King playing off of Batman, King playing off of Bruce. So Mr. Lazenby had the lion's share of the episode, and clearly was more than up to the task to do so. And they really did have to have that dynamic to really drive home the fact that they are a couple that was once deeply in love. If you remember what, you know, the original episode with them in it, mm-hmm. they're clearly very, very deeply madly in love, and just seeing the trajectory of what has come to, you know, between them at this point, and as you know, what their relationship has come to is pretty interesting. And you really had to drive that home with the way that you interacted with each other. They are really at each other's throats, and you know, I love that Mr. Lazenby's delivery is sort of just crescendos to that final scene where he's completely lost it. Like it's like he doesn't really do a whole lot of screaming until that final scene where he's just completely lost it. He's, you know, he doesn't care anymore. He's you know, dropping all pretenses of being this refined you know, British leader, and he's just letting Batman have it at that point. And the gloves are off, the facade is off, and it ultimately leads to his undoing. So it's pretty interesting that's how that turned out. But yeah, great performances by both of our leads there, as you mentioned.
Absolutely. And then speaking of leads, we of course do have the late Kevin Conroy and Will Friedle as Bruce Wayne and Terry McGinnis Batman, respectively. And again, it's not really their episode. They are in it, and Bruce gets some, as you said, some funny moments where he hangs up on King, and then his interactions with King and Queen when they aren't when before Terry kind of arrives on the scene. So I think there's some fun sort of quieter moments, but it is the majority, as said, is it's card puns and chess puns and crown and king and on all this stuff for both of them. But I do really like, I will say, Wilfred L in the scene with Melanie in the alley, I think is very, very good. Where there's just this sense where he's not, and again, that this is shown in the visual language of the episode too, where he can't look at her when she asks him about, when she asks him about the note for Terry, he can't even look at her because it's clearly still a very, painful moment in his life where he had to make this choice of whether or not he was going to, well, I can't say stay loyal because he did cheat on her, but right. Whether he was going to stay with Dana and sort of stay on the path he was on, or maybe take a chance and go after the unknown with Melanie. And it's clearly still painful. And I think that comes out. It's not a lot of dialogue, but as she explains that she's cut off from her entire family, he just says, I'm sorry. And then as she asks him about the note, he just says, yeah, he got it. Like it's very simple, but how direct and how short he is. And again, this is paired with the visuals of the episode and the music, as you mentioned, in that scene, it all kind of comes together there. But I do think Wilfred L is really, really strong in that scene, especially.
Yeah, I agree. I love the dynamic between him and Bruce also, as I mentioned, in the sort of the back and forth that they have in the negotiation scene. And then the little bit of witty repartee that they have after the big fight scene at the end. And as I mentioned, the Bruce questioning where Terry was, and he said that there was an ace in the hole. And then Bruce responds with, well, I had one too, or whatever he says. It's really great. Like, I love that back and forth that they had. And, another week where we get a great exhibition of what the chemistry that Mr. Conroy had with almost everybody that he ever was on screen with, but specifically for this show, with Wilfred L's Terry, and how that could be, that dynamic could be done for comedy, how it could be done for serious in serious moments and drama but whatever was asked, they really gelled well together. And here, season three, you're well into their relationship there. And I'd mm-hmm. say that they were pretty much working on all cylinders here at this point. So yeah, strong from both of our leads.
Yeah. So for all those reasons, I ended up settling on, I went with an 8 out of 10. Like I said, I was not a fan of Mr. Stevenson as Paxton Powers. I think that brought my score down a little bit. Again, I don't necessarily think it's anything he did wrong. It's just so, I just felt it was a little flat and a little one note. And maybe that's part of the point, is that he's just this, he's not an interesting person. He's just a spoiled rich kid. And maybe that's kind of part of the direction for it. But for whatever reason, that didn't quite click for me. But I think really, as we said, the strength of this episode, for sure, in addition to of course, Kevin Conroy and Wilfred L, as always, is those performances by Miss Douglas and Mr. Lazenby, just both really, really strong, and certainly the most they've gotten to do in every episode, as the previous two certainly more focused on 10 and Terry, and that the black cat, Catwoman type of, forbidden fruit relationship that Terry was flirting with here, whereas this one is really, really focused on King and Queen, and perhaps unsurprisingly, given both of their pedigrees as actors, but they're both fantastic. So a strong 8 out of 10 from me.
Yeah, and even though I didn't dislike Paxton as much as you did, I also gave it the same exact score, an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're really on the same wavelength here today. But yeah, it's a round, solid, rounded out cast there. And for a fun episode, and one that I wouldn't have necessarily remembered as one that I would have ranked so high. But again, that's the fun sometimes of going through these episodes and giving mm-hmm. categories, individual scores, and totaling up here at the end and getting an interesting total, which is a beautiful segue to totaling up our final scores for today's episode. Totaling everything up, Liam, I end up with a 32 out of 40.
And yes, if you're keeping score at home, I also have a 32 out of 40. It's been a while since we've had an exact match, or at least where we matched in all four categories.
Agreed.
The final score.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. That used to happen like seemingly all the time if you go back and listen to our earlier episodes, but it's been a while for that.
Somewhere along the lines, you got a lot more generous with giving higher scores and things, and I became cold and just more brutally honest with my ratings. Is now I tend to give at least two to three points lower than you on most
episodes, it seems. Seems that way, but yeah, I hope we can jump briefly into rewatchability here. I think this is an easy double thumbs up. It's important to the show. It's the return of characters. It's the end. This is the end of this little Royal Flush Gang trilogy, complete with your happy ending for Ten and Jack. You have the write-off of Pax and Powers here. Leads directly into, you know, at the start of Return of the Joker. That's a plot point, is that after Paxton was taken out of power, that Bruce has returned to run Wayne Enterprises for the first time in X amount of years. So like there's integral plot points to big stuff in future DCAU things, and just as an episode of Batman Beyond, it's just a great episode. So I think this is an easy two thumbs up.
Yeah, I concur. It's a great episode. It's integral to the arc for this gang. It's a recurring character, as you mentioned, plays into the whole Return of the Joker plot. So yeah, I definitely give this two thumbs up, which again, the start of this week, I don't know that I would have said that, because this episode didn't leave a lasting impression on me. There weren't a lot of plot points that I remembered, so that goes to show you never know. Any given week here at the DCAU review, am I right?
Absolutely. You never know what to expect.
That's right.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right. Well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week. Don't forget, thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for supporting us that way. If you'd like to support us some additional ways, we have a multitude of ways to do so. The ways that are free, I will list those first. You can follow us on social media at DCAU Review. You can follow us on Instagram at DCAU Review. You can also subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. And if your podcast app, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts, allows you to leave a review, 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. And if the podcast allows you to interact with it in some way, leave a little blurb about why you like us. We had a couple recent reviews, Liam, we were looking at this week that we were so kind of people to leave on Apple Podcasts. And we appreciate those that that have left those little blurbs talking about the show. We do read them. We are thankful for you for leaving them. There was one that was just left last week, actually. So thank you to the listeners that continue to do that. And remember, if you've left one before, apparently Apple Podcasts allows you to leave multiple. So if you are feeling extra generous, go back in and leave a little paragraph about what you're still enjoying about the podcast. We would greatly appreciate that. If you listen to us on Spotify, there is a weekly poll and question. You can interact with us that way. That's exclusive for our Spotify listeners. So you can check that out. Those are the free ways to help us out. If you want to throw a couple of your hard-earned dollars our way, we would greatly appreciate that. Multiple ways to do that as well. Head over to anchor.fm/DCAU review. And there is actually a link there that you can give. It's also in our show notes. If you want to buy us a coffee or something like that, you can do that by using that link. You can also head over to DCAUreview.com and click on the store tab, and you can buy yourself a piece of merchandise from the podcast. Some great stuff there. It's also a link in the show notes. Additionally, one final free way to support us, as we mentioned at the top, head over to youtube.com/thepodtower, subscribe and like our videos. If you consume your podcast that way, it's a great way to support us as well. Speaking of podcasts and unpredictability, Liam, we have an unpredictable week coming next week, as we will return once again with another double feature of Zeta Project episodes. Ooh. And, you know, this week we actually had some interaction from our friend Maddie from Watchtower Database. Maddie, thanks. If you're listening to this episode, thanks. Thanks for
being the one person who listened to
the Zeta Project episode and interacted with us with regards to it.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. We'll try to be a little kinder next week when we review it, just for your sake.
That's right. But so the next two episodes in order, it is, and I mean this more than I ever have, it's your kind of show, Puke Face. It's a double feature, and it's episodes 6 and 7 in watch order, which are Westbound and Hicksburg. Just delighted to discover what those titles mean for this show that we have never watched before. But hey, we get through those two, and then the crossover episode's coming. So
right, where it's all leading.
In the next future month, we'll actually have an interesting episode to talk about. But now we'll find something, as we always do. Sometimes the episodes where we feel like we have the least to say, and there ends up being a lot of riffing. Mm-hmm. So those sometimes end up being some of the more fun episodes we do all year. So I am looking forward to coming back with two more Zeta Project episodes next week.
Cannot wait. Actually, I can, as I say every time. I can wait. But until then, I'm Cal.
I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on that next episode of the DCAU Review.
Adios.